Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the East Eddy Ranch in Trout Lake, Washington. There's a lot going on tonight, and we're going to do a little different show tonight. We're going to have a more of a down-to-earth approach and talk with Michael Trudeau, who's an economic advisor and journalist, and really has his finger on the pulse of what's going on, you know, in today's political, economic, and hopefully our natural world we live in, too. It seems like they're all coming together right now in a grand finale. So with any further ado, I'd like to welcome Michael on the show. Michael, are you with us?
I am, and thanks for having me, James.
Oh, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
You know, we cover just about every subject here, and what I find is that some people go, and you need to get your feet on the ground, you know, and talk a little more about you know, the world in which we live and, you know, things that are happening in, you know, the political and social structures and economic structures. And you seem to be the perfect man for the job.
Which could very much be tied into some of the other subjects that you talk about as well when you start to look at the group that's running the Federal Reserve.
Yeah. You know, I've always felt, you know, people will say, and I haven't really said it that often, but I always feel there's this hierarchy. And at the very top of the hierarchy is an unseen energy that's not really good, you know.
A lot of people say, you know, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that most people would be absolutely aghast to understand.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some truth in all of the rumors. When you hear rumors, you know, I always look at it and go, well, you know, it could be somebody with a vested interest, but at the same time, there's always a kernel of truth to every rumor.
Yeah. You know, it seems like as you climb up the ladder of power and control, you might say, it just gets darker and darker and darker, and it goes into areas that people don't even want to know about.
Now, you're right about that. When you start to talk about things that people don't want to know about, I think big piece of that comes down to what's going on in the economic structure of the country and you know, frankly, the globe. And I think that part of it is that people are so horrified when they start to realize what's happening that it comes down to the thing about, you know, if I just don't look at this hideous monster, it can't get me.
Yeah.
And so they'll tend to just turn away and ignore the facts that are in front of them. Part of the thing that I've done is I've tried to educate people to the basic misconceptions in the economic structure off the bat. And one of the things I'd like to have done in my career is kind of educate people the fact that the Federal Reserve is a fraud. And one of the things that I point to as the first misconception that most people have is that the Federal Reserve Bank is a branch of the United States government. And why I say that is because I've actually gone into major metropolitan areas. I live, you know, outside of Minneapolis for one. That's the 15th largest market in the country. But I've been in every major city of the country. And I like to walk around in major cities and poll people right on the streets as I'm walking by them and just say, excuse me, if you've got a quick second, can you answer one question and tell me who owns the Federal Reserve? And those that answer, most of you, they'll look at you like you're a nut, but most of the ones that answer will always come back with, well, it's the government. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the first misconception, is that this is a branch of the United States government. In fact, it's not. The Federal Reserve Bank is no more federal than Federal Express, and they have no reserves. It's a private company that is owned by individual stockholders, and it's a for-profit corporation. As a matter of fact, it's the only for-profit corporation that operates in the United States as tax-exempt status, both federal and state levels. So again, when you look at this, you start going, well, wait a minute, I've always been under the conception, of course, that these guys are the guys who make our money, so they must be a branch of the federal government, when in fact, as I point out, they're not.
Yeah, aren't they based out of Portugal or something like that?
As a matter of fact, they're based out of several different areas, Portugal being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The major, I guess, there's several trains of thought or several groups out there that have different philosophies on this, but the main one, the main theme, comes back to basically it is still England that owns this country, even though we so to speak, won the Revolutionary War on the physical front. They took over on the monetary front when they left the country, and that was about it. And there's some truth to that, again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes down to the rumor aspect. Well, yeah, that's a big one, but there's some real big truth to that one. There are 12 central banks that basically make up the Fed system, and the ownership of these 12 banks comes down to something that is significant, because when you look at this, it's a matter of, well, who is it that's running the money in this country? And it is coming down to individuals who actually own these banks. And again, when you look at this, here's a group of people that are operating, well, frankly, now illegally in the country since 1963, based on an executive order that John Kennedy signed. But they're not only operating illegally in the country, they're here to steal the wealth of the nation, and they're very effective at their jobs.
Yeah, that didn't do Kennedy too much good, I guess.
No, he signed an executive order in June of 1963. The executive order was 11,110. And folks who are connected, I think everybody through the internet right now, if they can go even to Google, you don't even have to type in executive order, just type in the number 11,110, and up will come the information that I'm about to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But the executive order that John Kennedy signed basically took the Federal Reserve and said, listen, you guys are operating here under false precepts, so we're going to pull a plug here and put you guys out of business, and instead of allowing you to print the nation's currency and charge us interest, we're going to go back to the Treasury and have the Treasury create the currency based on the amount of gold and silver held by the Treasury, as the U.S. Constitution says it's supposed to do. And he did exactly that with that executive order. There's been a lot of speculation as to what happened with Kennedy. Most people, I think, in the country believe it wasn't Oswald, at least a lone gunman as the assassin, right? But when you look at what kind of motivations are out there, when you look at this executive order he signed, he took 300 individual people that at the moment were splitting $1 trillion tax-free annually and said, the gig's up, man, you're done. And at that point, I think you've got 300 people that are, you know, sans the trillion annual, who have now powerful motivation for a homicide and probably the money to get it done.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right, and when you further analyze this, you start to realize, well, what happened here? He took the Federal Reserve, put them out of business, so the Federal Reserve notes literally went bye-bye overnight and were replaced by these Treasury notes. You can actually go and get them. Collectors have them for sale. Folks who are old enough may even remember the red sealed notes that came out in 63. Kennedy gets shot and killed, as we're aware, just 5 months later. It was June when he signed the executive order. So 5 months later, he's shot and killed in Dallas. And basically, without a whimper, out go the Treasury notes, in come the Federal Reserve notes again, and we're back to using the Federal Reserve currency, even though Kennedy put them out of order with that executive order, which has never been, you know, in any way, shape, or form superseded or amended, so it's still active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many things that are coming out right now. I'm getting a barrage of emails, you know, with the IRS saying, you know, there is no law that, you know, says it's mandatory, that it's volunteer, and it just seems all of our federal agencies, you might say, just are not what they seem to be.
Well, they aren't, in the respect that when you look at who it is that's pulling the strings, and a lot of people like to blame the government, and it's, you know, the left side of the government, or it's the right side. It was Clinton. No, it's Bush.
Yeah.
And what it really boils down to is the people really need to have a concept of the fact that it's neither one of these two people or anybody else in that position. It is the person who is in charge of the Federal Reserve, or the group, rather, that sits down and makes the policies. One of the ways I like to show people that is you can say, well, you know, here we are, America, we're the strongest nation in the free world. Who's the head of the strongest nation in the free world? Well, it's the president. Doesn't matter which one it is at the time, but he can stand up at a podium and speak for hours and change absolutely nothing. And then another individual can stand up and make two sentences and change the global economic structure for decades to come, that being the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at who actually has power here in the world, it certainly wouldn't be the United States president versus the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, and they're usually just doing what they're told anyway from another three or four levels up anyway.
Absolutely, and it's wonderful that you point that out, because if you go to who we have now as the chairman, it's, you know, Bernanke, but if you go back, it was Alan Greenspan. And prior to Alan Greenspan becoming the Federal Reserve chairman, he had a wonderful quote that is used by a lot of people out there. And the quote is, in the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect your savings from confiscation through inflation. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the hidden confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. He then becomes the Federal Reserve chairman some years later. And, of course, that quote goes out the window until he resigns. And now he's kind of getting back on that bandwagon again. So I think you're right about that. Once they make you the chairman of the Federal Reserve, you're going to say what they want you to, and that's about it.
Yeah, it's ongoing. There's so many things coming up right now. I've been keeping a real pulse on nature and what's happening in nature, and we've got all of these events coming up. You know, I think the biggest one coming up is this Solar Cycle 24. Are you aware of that one?
Yep, absolutely.
Now
I'm an amateur astronomer, so I follow quite a bit. I've got a wonderful history going back in astronomy.
Now, they're saying that this is going to, 2009 on, we're in it right now, but it's going to really accelerate. And coronal mass ejections and flares are most likely going to be taking down the the grid, you know, the internet, everything.
Agreed. I was surprised if you go back just a few years ago when we had the major coronal mass ejections where they were talking, you know, record proportion, never before any type of event like this that we could tag. And I thought, wow, you know, any minute now you're going to see the satellites going down, and they didn't, and I was really surprised at that. So I think you might be right. I think we came awful darn close to the last go-around here just a few years back, and I think the big one's coming right now.
Yeah, they say this next one's going to be 50% bigger, and I don't think people are aware that, you know, what happens when the grid goes down is your, you know, your plastic doesn't work, your cards don't work, the gas isn't being pumped. You know, it's not a good situation when that comes down. And you know, another thing I noticed you were talking about the chips. I'm wondering what these solar flares, these EMP pulses or whatever, or coronal mass ejections, what are they going to do to the chips? Because supposedly they'll take down the chips in cars, and cars won't operate if we get hit.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, it doesn't take a whole bunch of an electromagnetic pulse to knock cars out.
Yeah.
You know, a big enough EMP burst is enough to even knock out the battery in the car. So it's certainly not just a possibility, but even a feasibility that if you get a large enough ejection, yeah, you could see that happen where everything shuts down. And, you know, when you start to look at the things of inconvenience, surely, you know, having your car being gone for a while or even permanently would be very inconvenient. What I look at, though, that people might not see as beyond that is how many people are drawing their water based on electricity. And if the electricity gets shut off, how will they get water from that point forth? I know myself as a perfect example. My wife and I live on a farm, a hobby farm, out in a rural area about 50 miles out of the city. And I've got a well. But my well is run by electricity, and the problem with my well is it's 300 feet down.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to draw water from that well without a pump that's operating through electricity, and I can't use a hand pump because it's too far to draw the water, I am now relegated to dropping some type of a container down this pipe and then, you know, dropping it 300 feet to hand over hand pull it back up again.
Yeah.
You know, people, I don't think, are thinking from that perspective about what would it be like if the infrastructure really did shut down. What would it be, and based on any number of many possible scenarios that could happen, because we are so tight on things like the JIT system or just-in-time system. They have for instance, at your grocery store, they have this system that's called the JIT, or J-I-T, stands for just-in-time delivery system. And what it means is, if you're walking into the grocery store to pick up your cornflakes today and you reach onto the shelf and there's two boxes left, you pick up the second to the last box, that is the exact precise moment that a truck is pulling up to the loading dock and back with Kellogg's cornflakes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the second they run out, they're being replaced. And the reason they have to do that is to quell waste. If they get too many, if they order too many boxes to begin with and we don't consume it enough, it expires and they lose quite a bit of money. So they've come down to this system now where it's just the second it's out comes the next round. Well, of course, take one chain out of that link and suddenly the grocery stores are going without any kind of new shipments of food. And, you know, we're so precariously and so tightly intertwined right now that any tiny link out of any part of the chain really can send the whole thing tumbling down.
Yeah, and that whole system depends on the airwaves and the net, I guess, the computer, you know, the internet, all these other things that they're operating on.
Right.
You know, which is probably the first thing that's going to go down would probably be the internet, more than likely.
And you know, part of the thing that I guess I fear the most, James, is that there will be an event. I think that's probably a foregone conclusion. There are so many opportunities for events to spring into action here. But I think it's going to be an event that's being caused on purpose to basically, again, take from the populace of the country. The Federal Reserve, the guys, and I, you know, I'm going to keep chiming in on the Federal Reserve because I think these are pretty much the main thugs in the arena here.
Uh-huh.
But the Federal Reserve gang has been quietly stealing the wealth of this nation for a very long time. Thomas Jefferson warned us, this is probably one of my favorite all-time quotes, when he said, "I fear banks more than I fear standing armies." Uh-huh. And the quote that he said went on to say, "If the American people ever allow private banks to issue their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that grow up around them will deprive the people of their property until they wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered." And here we are today, the year 2008, and less than 1% of the American population owns a home. So apparently, we, starting in 1913, granting the Federal Reserve Act into law, then beginning operation in 1916. So from 1916 to 2008 have managed to take basically all of the entire population's property and abscond with it for themselves. And basically nobody's even noticed it's gone down.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know how many, I lost track of how many people have, the foreclosures have gone up just phenomenal.
Absolutely. And again, that's not by accident. When you look at what just happened with those interest rates, first they start pushing the interest rates down and down and down and down for basically no reason at all to the lowest point. I'm 48 years old, almost, and they push it to the lowest point in my lifetime interest rates. And suddenly we look at what's going on and everybody's running out. The banks cannot throw enough money at the population to go out and buy these houses on these floating arms or adjustable rate mortgages. And as soon as they get everybody into the kitty, then comes the aspect of, wow, we're really messed up the economy with these rates down here. We're going to have to raise rates because if we don't raise rates, our dollar is going to collapse. Mm-hmm. So they begin to raise rates and there's a couple of speculations as to whether or not they did that based on their own aspects or because China started, you know, coming up and saying, listen, I'm holding $1.3 trillion of your debt and you're collapsing the value of my, you know, my dollars here. So we need you to stop that and fix this or else we're going to send this $1.3 trillion in debt home to roost, which would effectively kill the economy, period. Mm-hmm. So it might have been muscle from China, it might not, but they started to raise the interest rates. Well, y'all knew the second they were going to do that, that that was going to start this foreclosure meltdown. And, you know, when was this? January of 2005, I was up on another program in front of a very large audience of people and roughly about, I think they've got an audience about 10 million and said, hey, here's the thing. You are going to see gold begin to skyrocket. You are going to see the housing market begin to crash and you're going to begin to see RFID microchips going into smart cards to be used in place of currency. And this will all take place probably in the course of the next 2 to 4 years. So here we are in 2008, roughly a little bit, 3.5 years down, not even 3.5, 3 years down the road. The day I did that, gold was at 405. It's at 975 today.
Mm-hmm.
The housing market certainly began that crash. And now, if you turn on the television, which I really try to avoid doing, but if you turn on the television, there isn't a moment that goes by where you don't see a commercial where they're showing you that they're conditioning you now to believe that if you're using cash or a checkbook, that you are a problem for society. And you might know what I'm talking about when you see these commercials where they're playing wonderful, beautiful music and everybody's dancing and showing a great time and they're all happy and all the colors are there and they're all waving a magic card in front of a scanner to walk out with their products and then somebody gets in line and comes up with cash and the music goes to sour music, the color goes to black and white, everybody gets scowls on their faces and they look at the person until the person pulls out with the card and waves it in front of the scanner and then everybody gets happy again. Showing you that if you're not using these microchipped cards, which require no signature, there's no PIN numbers, anything like that, then again, you're a problem on society now.
Hmm.
And, you know, this is not, none of this is happening by accident. This is happening by design. The dollar is dying on purpose. This is not some, you know, cosmic forces at work here taking the value of our dollar down or economic evolution that's taking the value of the dollar down. People have to realize your dollar has been losing value your whole entire lifetime, no matter how old you are, and that's based on theft, not accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and luckily we don't have a TV up here. We don't, we live up on a mountain, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, and I refuse to get satellite.
Listen, so. I'm on my way there. In a couple of years, I'll be right next door to you doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do this basically, I'll watch some of the news agencies to find out what the other side has to say.
Yeah.
When I'm doing research, and you know, you do watch that, you just can't help but see those commercials, and every time I see one, it just makes me think, boy, I hope the masses are catching on to this.
You know, I speak at conferences now and then, and, you know, you go to the hotel and you flip on the TV and they've got like 70-plus channels or whatever. And I'm sitting there going through all these channels going, there is absolutely nothing on whatsoever.
Right.
And, you know, finally I got to like a Discovery Channel or something that, you know, had some kind of nature program. And they have this guy, you know, that's fighting the Arctic, you know, and he's I don't know what it was about. And he's going, oh, I could die at any minute, you know, and I could do this. And he's on a boat, and he's going through the glaciers and everything else. And I'm going, are people really believing this? Because he's got 3 or 4 high-definition cameras on him.
Right.
You know, people probably 10 feet away.
Right.
And I don't really think he's in any life-threatening situation.
They'll probably staying at the hotel tonight.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm watching this whole thing, you know. And then the guy, you know, jumps in the cold water and runs up on the beach and takes his shirt off and does push-ups and flexes, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching this whole thing. I'm going, oh my God, what? I mean, it's like people have become totally brain dead, and
they have,
and they've lost their ability to look at anything logically or step back from the hypnotism and go, well, wait a minute, you know. that, you know, who's filming this guy?
Right. And one thing that I've noticed, though, that's recent, and I mean like even in the last 2 years recent time, is people that I talk to, or even when I'm just in situations where I'm not even talking about this, but I'm hearing other people talk about it, and it's just like it seems to me that the general populace is really starting to catch on to some of this.
Yeah.
And it might be that they can't put their finger on it, but at least they realize something's up, and they can't quite put a finger on this as to what's going on, but it's really hard for you to not notice some of this stuff. I mean, I don't remember what it was, one of the news channels I'm watching, and they were talking, I think it was Good Morning America, and they were talking about the fact that the average American's food bill in the last year has gone up 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to think about a 30% increase on what it takes to feed your family. That's a 30% increase, never mind the fact that gasoline is up, you know, obviously that sharp and more. But just the food aspect of 30% increase in 1 year's time is absolutely shocking. And I think that when you start to realize that you're not catching up, in other words, you're not keeping pace, there's nobody out there that's gaining 30% annual right now as far as any kind of a raise from their job, on average anyways, unless you happen to, you know, be the right place the right time. People are really falling behind, and they're starting to, you know, besides the fact of when the refinancing was going on, which they were basically using their homes as ATM machines, and their credit cards are all maxed out, here we sit now, people are now having to pay, shelve out more than 30% more for food, and they're doing it with their credit cards and the value of their homes, not from what's coming out of the job. And how you know that is because now you know that credit card debt is at its highest point ever. You know that personal savings is at its lowest point since the Depression. People have really had to wipe out and max out everything just to stay alive.
Yeah, it seems like that. I've always had this theory that the way the program works is that, you know, they get the flock nice and fattened up, you know, and then they get you right at the level, everything's hunky-dory, and then and when you start getting a little too rich and a little too much money, you're getting a little too much power, and you're getting a little too much, you know, more vocal or whatever, and so they have to come in and pull the rug out from under and fleece the sheep, you know.
And they're professionals at it.
Yeah, and everybody starts over again, and they really have no idea who fleeced them.
Right.
All they know is they've lost their fleece, and they're standing naked, shivering out in the field.
Well, and it's too bad that people didn't originally pay attention, you know, to what Greenspan had to say, and it wasn't more of a vocal, you know, recommendation of the only way you're going to stop these guys from stealing your money through inflation. And again, that's not him saying that inflation is something that's accidental. This is theft, and he calls it such. But he says the only way you can stop it is through gold. And there's sense in that in this respect. If you look at what's happened to the currency, at any time, gold or silver has pretty much protected you. You can say, for instance, going back to when I was kid, for instance, and I use this analogy quite a bit because I think it makes sense just about to anybody out there. When I was a kid, there was a candy bar that I liked that was 5 cents. All candy bars were a nickel. And so that means with a paper Federal Reserve note, a $1 bill, I could go buy myself 20 chocolate bars. I could also take a silver dollar, 90% silver dollar from the 1800s or the 1930s, anywhere in between there, and that also at that time would have bought me the exact same amount of candy bars. I could have bought 20 chocolate bars with a paper dollar or 20 chocolate bars with a silver dollar. Today, if I take my paper dollar and go buy a chocolate bar, I'm going to only get one. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to buy two with my paper dollar anymore, just one. So I've lost 19 of my original candy bars on that paper dollar over my lifetime. Today, if I take my silver dollar, though, and go buy candy bars, I get all 20 of them still. So again, it's the, you didn't, by owning silver over the course of my lifetime, I didn't make money. What I did was I stopped them from taking it away from me in that example, as is just about every other example. Another perfect equation to show is when we look at the price of food going up 30% to the average family, it's not that food became 30% rarer, and that's what caused that jump. How we know this is because everything else did it too. Gold came up in the exact same time frame of when food went up 30%, gold came up 31%. Again, gold did not become rarer in that period of time. What happened is it took 30% more of the weaker dollars to buy the gold. That's why people will always run to gold or silver as a protection measure in times like these, because it stops that, if you will, the buying power of your dollar from going out the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems to be... Now you have a your website that you gave me was it's colonial resources, I believe, .com. Is
correct.
That correct?
Yeah.
And that's a place where people can actually invest in precious metals or...
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of people that will say, listen, I'm interested in investing in metals and I want to make money, and that's great, and I'll tell you, by just by virtue of anything you've done accidentally in the last 7 years, you've made money owning metals, period.
Uh-huh.
I only recommend that people do it for this purpose, in protection, because, again, over my lifetime and your lifetime and my parents' lifetime and my grandparents' lifetime and their grandparents' lifetimes, gold has basically bought the exact same products or services at any time through that period. We certainly can't say that about the paper dollars. Another analogy is, if you had a $20 gold piece, which is an ounce of gold, back in the 1800s or 1900s, up till 1907, basically what you had was the same thing as a $20 paper bill with this ounce of gold, because they both would have bought you the exact same products or services. A good quality man's suit of clothing, for instance, could have been bought for a $20 bill back in the 1850s, as you could have used the $20 gold piece. If you come up to today's standards, again, trying to get a suit of clothes with $20, you're not going to get more than a tie.
Mm-hmm.
But with an ounce of gold today at $975, you've still got the suit of clothes.
Yeah.
So, again, it's that aspect of people will say, well, I want to invest to make money. And, again, there's great opportunity to do that. People are doing that all the time and have been for decades with metals. But at the same time, you could do that with just about anything you want to be speculative with, as long as you know what you're doing and you're paying attention or educating yourself through the process. I look at this simply as a protection measure. I frankly realize a couple of things. One is that statistically speaking, there has never been a paper currency known to mankind in any era or in any nation of the world that made it to its 100th birthday. So here we are today, our paper currency is now getting pretty darn long in the tooth, and we're down to the 4th percentile range of the left of what's left over of the original buying power. So I know that at some point this is going to come into some catastrophic freefall. We might be there at this moment the way things are going now. That being said, if the dollar were to collapse, what do I have in my possession around me or in my home that my wife and I can use to trade for tangible items that we may be short on to keep the family alive? And, you know, there's a lot of things you could set up. I mean, I've got, for instance, long-term storable food supplies that we've put up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a master gardener. We've got a 2,000-square-foot organic and heirloom garden that we grow, and we put up everything in that garden. So we're very efficient at that, but at the same time, it's like along the lines of, I'm not a mechanic, so what happens if my tractor goes down and I need a mechanic to come and fix it? If he doesn't need produce, which is about the only thing I've got then that I can trade, I need something else that's of value to him, and that's why I hold gold and silver as well. I can use that in a barter situation to trade for any good or services, because my metals are valued as money anywhere on this planet and have been for 5,000 straight years, where you certainly can't say that about any paper currency.
Uh-huh.
I like to put it this way, James. The Romans are no longer in charge here, but we're still spending their gold coins.
Yeah.
So long after this regime falls apart, our gold coins will still be being spent by the people as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always felt with me is that there's a certain, seems like there's steps involved, and gold is a very, very good way of hedging, you know, against inflation and what's going on, the collapse of the dollar. And then eventually you're going to get back into, you know, the basics, like you're talking about, is foodstuffs and,
right,
and, you know, wheat and oats and things like that, and loaf of bread. You know, somebody's going to have a loaf of bread, and you're going to say, hey, I'll give you this dollar for it, and they're going to say, heck no.
Right.
And, you know, and you say, well, how about this gold dollar? And they'll go, well, let me think about it, you know.
Well, the reason that might still work, even in that type of a scenario, and I want to start by prefacing with this. When people call this company and they ask, listen, I'm hearing you on these radio programs, I'm really nervous about this, I see it coming, the writing's on the wall, I want to get some gold and silver to protect my family to use in barter emergency situations. The very first questions asked are always this: what have you done so far? And why I'm asking that is because I want to find out if this is an individual who's taking this seriously enough to really have done some research yet, because the bottom line is, I'll always start off with, do you have a water filtration system yet?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, no. And I'll say, then start with a water filter and get a gravity-fed, non-powered, gravity-fed, the kind that have the porcelain filters in the canister. You pour water in the top, it goes through the bottom, you pour it out of the bottom through a spigot. It generates about, my wife and I have one, generates about 3 gallons every 20 minutes. So again, that's something that I can now take a pond water amount, a bucket of pond water that's been infected with anthrax or smallpox, filled with mercury, lead, anything I want to, pour it right through the top of this thing. It'll clean out everything till it's purer than what's coming out of my tap today. So let's start there, because again, that's problem number one, because you know, water, if you've got no water, you've got 3 days of life in you.
Yeah.
And that's it. So that's number one. Number two is food. You can go on a hunger strike. You won't make it forever. But the bottom line is you can certainly go on a hunger strike longer than you can a water strike. So get the water situation nailed down first. Then if you've got area to garden in, become a gardener. If you don't know how, start with books and start with programs. And if not, then the next thing to do is if you've got the money or the means to do so, lay up some long-term storable food. I've got a 2-year supply for a family of 5 that's got a 30-year shelf life to it. And you know what, James? In 20 years, if nothing's happened where I need this food yet, I'm going to donate it all to food shelves, and I'll be a happy guy one way or the other. So that's not a factor for me. Then I'll say to them, then it makes sense for you to own gold and silver based on the fact that if you've got bread and somebody comes up to you and says, I want that bread, or I really need some bread, and you've got extra, and I say, well, what do you got that I don't have? And you have nothing that I don't have to offer me for exchange for the bread, and I'm not an evil guy, so I want to help you out anyway. I don't want to see your family starve either. But if I've got the extra bread, I'm willing to give it to you. I want something in return. And you say, well, I don't have anything you need, but I've got this gold. I can take that gold because the one thing I need is, again, my tractor's out of whack, and the guy who needed the bread is not a mechanic. But if he trades me the gold for the bread, I can take that gold to the mechanic, and he will now trade me the gold to fix my tractor, because he can then take that gold and trade it to somebody else who's got something that he needs. Maybe he, for instance, has a hole in the roof, and the roofer will come over and repair the roof for the gold. So, again, there's always going to be a medium of exchange, because we can't just drive cattle around town to exchange as food one way or the other with everybody else. It just gets to be too inconvenient. That's why we're using currency in any way, shape, or form now, rather than just carrying around the items that we might need from day to day and swap with each other with the items.
Yeah, we are definitely, like the Chinese curse or whatever, we're definitely going into interesting times.
No doubt. No doubt. And that's what I meant about people in general are seeming to catch on to this. People are talking about stuff like, boy, I've never seen weather like this. Wow, this is really interesting how the this is happening. Or, wow, look at all these wars. Look at all these diseases. You hear all this talk about this, and people are really starting to catch on that there's something afoot. They can't, again, put a finger on it necessarily, but they know that something's going on. And, you know, part of it, again, is you start seeing your food bill go up 30% in a year. It's pretty shocking.
Yeah, I feel for these people that are, you know, they had these fires down there in California. And so, you know, a lot of people are homeless there, and hopefully some of them had fire insurance, which would have taken out the mortgage that they had.
Yeah.
You know, that they probably had to walk away from anyway. So
yeah.
It probably was a blessing to some, but to others, you know, it's devastating, and it's amazing how people are going from, you know, living in, you know, a very wealthy life to nothing or little or nothing, and you know, there's so many people right now. I'm blown away at the foreclosures and how many people are just walking away from the
house. Minneapolis, like I mentioned, where we are here, we're just like where I'm talking to you tonight from is Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
To give you an example, Hennepin County, which is the county that covers Minneapolis, they have had in January the largest foreclosure rate in history. Now, you know, that's not just my lifetime. That's my lifetime, my grandparents' lifetime, their grandparents' lifetime, because that's all still been here.
Mm-hmm.
So you go that far back and go, wow, this has been the largest foreclosure rate right here in history in that period of time. This is really shocking. Part of the thing that I guess really bothers me is that when it started going that way, people were catching on to this and going out and getting these loans that were well beyond their means and thinking, you know what, when it all comes down, the government will fix this for me, which means, of course, Reed, you and I will get, you know, further pillaged. Above and beyond what we might normally be pillaged by the Federal Reserve System. And now these guys have got this thing so screwed up, the Fed that is, that I don't think they can fix this on their own. I think what they've done now is they've got themselves in between the proverbial rock and a hard spot, because no matter how they try to fix one aspect of the economy, they begin to tip something else over on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got this problem, for instance, where did I see? Oh, here it is right here. There's an article that was in the AP here. What was the date on this? Just back last week, Tuesday. And the article that came on the Fed talking about this toxic economic mix the nation hasn't seen in 3 decades. Prices are speeding up or at the fastest pace in a quarter century. However, the economy's losing steam. They call this stagflation. And it says the Fed has had its hands full. This is a perfect analogy because this is right on target. The Fed has its hands full. It's preoccupied with the economic slowdown at the back door, but inflation looks to be sneaking in the back door. If the trend continues, the Fed would need to show the economy some tough love, meaning higher interest rates, to keep inflation from getting out of hand. Well, we're not doing that. We're lowering the interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as you do that, what do? You kill the dollar further. So as we keep pushing these interest rates down, you've got China screaming uncle over there going, hey, you guys cannot do this because you're crippling our economy. We're going to send this debt home to roost. There was an article, and you may have seen this, James. It came through here a few months back where the Chinese had kind of sent a warning, a shot across the bow, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They referred to it as the nuclear option. And this was a direct quote, the nuclear option. They did not mean, however, that they would be launching a nuclear attack in the way of bombs. What they meant was they would be sending this $1.3 trillion home to roost, and the nuclear option means economically we would have an all-out meltdown in the United States. What's interesting about that is right after that quote came out, Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve, went to China and had a powwow in China. Completely hush-hush, doors were closed, not a word leaked out. I did diligent research and couldn't find a single leaked word about what happened in that meeting. But what was very interesting was shortly thereafter, all of a sudden there's a new television campaign on the morning news about lead in the toys that's coming from China. Yes, it's horrifying. There's lead in the paint of these toys coming from China, in addition to which there's magnets that if your children swallow, they will die. There's choking hazards. In addition, I saw one that said there were little beads on some toy that if your children ate the beads, it was a date rape drug. Now, mind you, this all came down within a span of about 30 days, all of these warnings across the bow. And when were these warnings issued about how horrific Chinese toys were? About 30 days before the Christmas season. Now, if you're China, and you're producing all of these toys, your number one audience is America, and the number one season to sell to Americans is right before Christmas, especially when you're talking about toys like that. So all of a sudden comes this huge negative campaign about how horrifying Chinese toys are. Boy, if you get a Chinese toy for your kid, he's going to die from lead poisoning, magnets, date rape drugs. Something bad will happen to your kid if you get him a Chinese toy. And I'll tell you what, that was the shot that was fired back at China that says, listen, you send that $1.3 trillion even close to our shores, and I'll show you what an economic meltdown is for real. Because I'll bet you when it came time for Christmas shopping, not one parent in America went looking for Chinese toys specifically. And when they found one that said made in China, they put it back down on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you, that's that war that goes on behind the scenes where China says, you'll do what I tell you, and America comes back and says, don't think we're not in the driver's seat still here, just
mm-hmm.
because you're holding $1.3 trillion of our debt. And, you know, they've sold off everything in America. The Fed has basically sold off every single property there is. We don't own any of it. A lot of people, when I said less than 1% of Americans own a home, probably went, what's this guy talking about? I own a home. Well, I want you to ask yourself this question. Have you paid it off yet, or do you own a mortgage? Because if you own a mortgage, the bank owns your home.
Yeah.
So, again, that's less than 1% of us that own a home. The Chinese own more homes in America than we do. In addition to that, we're now selling off the entire infrastructure. We're selling off toll roads to foreign nations so they can collect the tolls on us. You know, you just start to scratch your head and just go, what's going on here?
Yeah, the forests as well are being sold off.
Mm-hmm.
There's just all kinds of land that's been given, I guess, as either sold off or it's held as collateral.
Right, and how do you fight this? How do you fight this as individuals? You can't. You could fight it as a collective, but you'd have to become awful large, awful vocal, awful quick.
Mm-hmm.
And the first step would be educating everybody. And again, when I walk through metropolitan areas, major metropolitan areas, Seattle, for instance, and ask people, I can literally walk up to 100 people and say, who owns the Federal Reserve? I'm not going to get one single person that's going to come back and say, well, that's a private company owned by individual stockholders. Not
mm-hmm.
one. So until the nation kind of gets the concept of what's going on here, I don't see how they've got a common enemy that they can bond against.
It seems like there's this underlying consciousness, you might say, of greed or these other people. They just lust for power and wealth at any expense. And it's been allowed to just run rampant. And now it's gotten to the point where it's like this disease that is it's a plague.
Right,
you know?
Well.
And, you know, I think it's run full course. You know, the Native Americans talk a lot about that. They talk about a beast, and they say the beast is, you know, the beast is like I can't remember the name, they say 2,000 miles wide, which represents how long it will reign. And they said it's all-consuming. It'll consume everything until it finally consumes itself. And I think we're at that point where the beast is about ready to just totally consume itself. There's nothing more.
No, I think you're right about that. Yeah. They've taken every single thing that there is. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, and they've hit on every level. I mean, they've just total. You know, I like that bumper sticker. It says, "Well, the war on nature is going well."
Yeah,
and that's about the only war we're doing well with.
Yeah,
we're doing a darn good job of.
You're right.
Destroying the air and the oceans and the water and the land and everything else in the forest. But I think we're at that point where people need to really wake up and smell the coffee that we can't keep going on this path, socially, economically, or environmentally. It's all moving towards this big collapse. And my feeling is that there's going to be two groups of people. One group is going to see the writing on the wall and move away and start preparing and just let it fall, and the other group is just going to fall with it and live in total denial, and they'll keep attacking people that are bringing this message to them that it's unsustainable.
And you know what? I don't think that's by accident either. I think that comes down to divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they very easily have divided this nation in many different directions. We are a nation divided amongst ourselves, where basically you can find a reason to fight with just about anybody you run into in a day.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. I always talk about, okay, if we're going to have contact with the rest of the universe or whatever, and, you know, we can't even get along with the races that are here now.
Right, right.
And the different cultures, and we can't even unify or come together and stop competing or warring on each other. So why would an advanced race come here, you know, when we can't even get our act together here on the planet, let alone what are we going to do with the rest of the universe and its
right.
diversity?
Unless they're here filming a documentary, I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, the aspect of this that people really need to come down to is that this is one of those things where you really cannot have the attitude too wholly of it's every man for himself. You won't be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have to be smaller communities that are going to be sticking together. It might be small neighborhoods. It might be apartment complexes, for all I know. But it cannot break down to an every man for himself mentality. It will not work. You've
mm-hmm.
got an entity here that is definitely working against us as the body of this planet, the people of this planet. There's no question you've got an entity working against us. And as that is said, we cannot fight this as individuals. It cannot be done. So if, for instance, you see this infrastructure breakdown where just one link in the supply chain goes down, the transportation goes down, and there's no more food at the grocery store, because it would be raided instantly at the grocery stores. I mean, if you remember what happened back in Russia when there was the run on the food, there was nothing within seconds in the grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
So now it comes down to, okay, you didn't get enough. What are you going to do now? Well, you have no option other than to go out and find food from other people who got enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I say you will not be able to do this on an every man for himself basis. It just will not work. I think people will have to band together, and I hope that it happens that way, because I think, you know, I'd like to be an optimist here, James, and assume that we still have a fighting chance. Right now, I look at this and go, man, we're getting killed here. The dollar has lost about 70% of its buying power. This is basically according to the Treasury's own numbers. 70% of its buying power, something like that, in the last 7 years. The reflection of that, again, is looking at that price of gold. I told you it was up 30%. In the last year, which it is, it's on average been up 31% every single year for 7 straight years. That is not because, again, gold is becoming rarer and rarer and rarer and rarer. As a matter of fact, now that the price is rising, they're pulling more out of the ground than they have in decades. So it's not about a rarity, it's about the value based on the decline of your currency's purchasing power. People will say, well, you know, gold's up about, what, 350% or more in that period of time. Yet the dollar is really only down 70%. How come the big boost? Well, that's because a lot of people are panicked right now and they're running into metals. And it's really hard, you know, to hold that price down when it's running like that, because people are buying it. It's a supply and demand issue. And it comes down to, you know, it's really scary. People are jumping in right now. This is the horrifying part to me. People are jumping in mass right now based on, the aspect of I'm going to make myself a killing here in the metals markets. And, you know, people have been making money hand over fist in this market for the last 7 years. At the same time, I've been telling people, do not look at this as your opportunity to get rich. If you're doing it, you're doing so on the back of your fellow Americans. You're doing so on the back of your brothers. So don't do that aspect. If you want to own metals, do it to protect yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's what metals have been for. It's been the world's money forever. We use paper because somebody told us to and said this is legal tender now and the other one isn't. So you have to use our paper now, or we'll put you in jail. That's basically how that all went down.
Yeah, I wrote a chapter on that in one of my books, and it covers the myth of money and all that, and how it all came into being. It's kind of interesting how we just gave everything away for these little green pieces of paper.
Oh, man.
And what then we'll do for them is even more amazing.
That's the worst part. That is the very worst part, what people are willing to do for the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just a piece of paper. I think one of my favorite quotes about the currency or about the paper is the Fed is the only ones that can take a valued commodity, slap some ink on it, and make it worthless overnight. And that, of course, take a tree, a valued commodity, turn it into paper, slap ink on it, and make it worthless overnight.
Yeah, it is interesting. I was in Santa Cruz, California, and they had Moss Landing. There was the big power station. They had a fire in it and shut it down. And so we were without power. That whole area was out of power for quite a while. And I went through that, and I noticed that there was a run on the supermarkets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without power for that whole area, it means, you know, the gas, you can't pump the gas. You couldn't get gas. You couldn't get anything.
Right.
It was just a real
Well, your
mess.
Smart cards won't work no matter what.
Oh, yeah, nothing worked.
No.
I mean, you had nothing, and you know, a lot of the sewers, you know, were backing up. You know, they weren't running. There's a lot of problems there, just unbelievable problems. You know, like you're saying, the wells weren't pumping. You know, people didn't have water.
Right.
You know, they're having water shortages down there as well. But, you know, I went to the supermarket right after that, and they had a generator in there, and they're running the supermarket. So I got a few things to, you know, just to stock up a little bit. And when I was in there, there was people looking in each other's baskets. These two ladies were fighting over candles.
Yeah.
You know, one lady just grabbed all the candles and put them in her basket.
Isn't it amazing what human nature comes down to? That's really good that you pointed that out, because this is something that you're not talking about all-out catastrophe yet. You're talking about a minor glitch in one small area causing that kind of a mental attitude among fellow citizens. I lived in Florida, South Florida, and I watched hurricane after hurricane after hurricane roll through, and the shocking part to me is you'd see a hurricane roll through, devastate a neighborhood like Gilbert or Andrew did, and you'd see people driving in pickup trucks with bottled water, jugs of bottled water, and they were charging $20 a bottle.
Wow.
Now, at that point in time, I'm telling you, I wanted to see people mob those trucks and take every bottle of water off there free of charge and pass them around to the people who need water in that neighborhood. Because when you start doing that to make that kind of a profit off your fellow man's necessity or dire necessity, I mean, there's just, in my opinion, there's not much worse that you can do in a day. I mean, that was, again, it's like you pointed out, the old ladies fighting over candles in their grocery store, you know.
Oh, and they were vicious, too.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. They're like screaming at each other, and she was trying to take some out of her cart, and the other lady was like finning her. I mean, it was unbelievable. I was going, my God.
Now, take that to the nth degree for a moment. I wrote an article fairly recently basically about, is Al-Qaeda ready to strike nuclear? Is an imminent strike by Al-Qaeda nuclear? Rather, is a nuclear strike by Al-Qaeda an imminent factor here in the United States? And I point out a very good amount of research as to why I feel that this is absolutely imminent here, that we are going to see a strike. Now, we can go back and forth on the who Al-Qaeda is and who, whether it's, you know, our own administration's involved or not, but that, one of the things I pointed out at the end of the article, it won't matter once the fuses are lit. We can sort all that out after they all go off. But in the meantime, there's quite a bit of evidence that says these guys have 7 tactical suitcase nukes poised and ready for the ultimate annihilation of our country. Because I'll tell you what, when you light off 7 nukes in this country and you hit major cities, it's not about taking down the population, it's about taking down the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you pointed out, the supply line breaks down for a minute and that grocery store is bare naked at your small town in California. What if it's like that all across the entire country all at once? Now you've got the runs on the grocery stores that are instant, but then after that, what do you have? Now you've got people who are going to be fighting in the street for every scrap of anything that there is. And again, this is not to say that that's what's going to happen, but it can be anything like that. We are so tightly wrapped around every system that we've got here that it doesn't take much of a disruption to throw it out of whack. I remember Y2K was coming in. Just before Y2K, a couple nights before it happened, they were showing grocery stores that were having runs on the grocery stores there too. And I thought, man, this is really getting out of control here. Not just the Y2K thing, but the mentality that people have. And that's why I said to the missus at that point, you know what we're going to do? We're going to start stockpiling right now, having nothing to do with this Y2K event because it was over. but we're going to do it right now anyway, because it showed me with that Y2K event, and that's where I really got going on this stuff, was, you know what, we're teetering on the brink right now, and it doesn't take much of a fuse being lit to set this whole thing off.
Well, you know, one thing I get all the time, everybody goes, well, remember Y2K, that was a big hoax, you know, and you're just another fear-monger and things like that. And I tell people, well, what's coming isn't man-made. I said it's not a computer chip that we're worried about.
Right.
I said we've got a massive solar cycle coming. You know, the earthquakes and volcanoes are exponentially just going off the charts, basically,
right,
in magnitude.
Well, how about avian influenza and SARS and all, you know?
Yeah.
You start looking around going, wow, this is really getting crazy.
Yeah, you know, and I'm just looking at the basics and knowing that we are moving into a highly charged place in the universe, and
right,
the scientists are recognizing this right now, and you know, all the other planets are glowing and putting off four times more light and going through atmospheric changes, and it's just obvious that you can't get out of the reality that change is in the wind. There's a major
right
change coming any way you look at it.
And right, and I don't think that makes you a fear monger, James. I think it makes you a realism monger.
Yeah, and I tell people, I said, this isn't prophecy and this isn't conspiracy. I said, this is now science. What we're looking at right now is science. And, you know, it's gone far beyond that. And I said, you know, you look at all the prophecies, you know, the Native American prophecies, the Mayan calendar, all of these things that talk about these times we're going through.
Right.
And they're all right on. And I said, that's what I look at is my own intuition and I look at what the ancients are saying, and then I look at science. What is science saying?
Well, and you know, here's the thing about that. You've hit something again, because when I looked at all those things and all of these various aspects that make me just, you know, look around in every direction going, I don't see a whole bunch of good here, and I see a whole bunch of bad. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take some protection measures. I'm going to up the amount of space that we garden with. I'm going to get my water filtration system. I'm going to buy a lot more gold and silver and so on. And so today I look back and go, wow, I did those things. Let's say nothing happens from here and we all get hunky-dory. The Fed says, gee, I'm sorry, gives everybody their houses back. Everything gets better. I've got a supply of food that I can pass out for free to anybody who wants it.
Mm-hmm.
I have got gold and silver that I've made an absolute killing on in the last 7 years. That's not what my attempt was, but if I cashed out because I don't need it, I'm so far ahead now, it's ridiculous. In addition to which, I've got my water filtration system, which we run our well water through anyways. How did I hurt myself?
Yeah.
I haven't.
It's
so,
a no-brainer.
Right, and that's just it. It's a matter of going, well, on the outside chance that any of this could happen, wouldn't it take just a little bit of common sense to say, let's have some cough syrup on standby in case we get a cold, you know?
Yeah.
It just rather than going, oh, darn, I've got a cold and the pharmacies are all closed. I'll have to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, with me, I'm one of those people that do own their home, you know, and, you know, the ranch here, I've paid it off, and I built my own home and
right
everything else, so.
Hey, you better be reaching around your shoulder right now, patting yourself on the back, James.
Yeah. And we grow a lot of our own food here and things, but, you know, we do have some major seasons to deal with, so we can't go grow year-round, so
right,
we do have to, you know, store some food up, but, you know, to me, it's not a matter of you know, I look at the food that I'm eating and the life that I'm living and the lack of stress and everything
right
else, and where's the loss?
Right, I mean, exactly. Where's the loss? That's it in a nutshell. And, you know, you're better off for it. You've like you've just pointed out, your health is so much better. Your stress level is so much better than the average Americans walking around. And, again, what is this? How can somebody point to this and say, see what you did wrong, James?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And they said, you live in fear, and I said, no, I'm prepared.
Right.
You know,
I'm not afraid.
No fear. You know, I'm not dependent on very much at all. So
no.
So,
and that's the thing. If people, you know, are just starting out to this, and you have access to a garden plot, make sure you get some garden seeds. I would recommend, and write this down, heirloom
mm-hmm
or open pollinated. Okay, that's what you guys want to go after, because you can take the seed from one crop and use it next year, and you'll get the exact same product. And go organic. That you're not going to be able to get pesticides when this meltdown occurs anyway. If you want to know a great pest deterrent, diatomaceous earth is wonderful for that. Plus, you can eat the stuff and feed it to all your animals to keep parasites out of you and the animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the kind of stuff that is free knowledge. You can buy a bag of diatomaceous earth for $20 that'll last you for your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to can. Learn how to root cellar. Learn how to dehydrate. Learn how to freeze. Those are the types of things that you can do to put up your own food. It just doesn't take a whole bunch of effort. And when you're all said and done and over with, you're living a much better lifestyle for it anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how hard is it to go down and buy some rolled oats, you know, a bag of rice and a bag of beans, you know, 50 or 25-pound bags, and, just set them aside? I mean, what?
Or rather than go pay, you know, $1 million for my year's supply of Ragu spaghetti sauce
mm-hmm.
that's questionable in its flavor and certainly questionable in all the ingredients that are in that jar, I like the one I make out of the tomatoes in my backyard much better.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly healthier for me, certainly a lot cheaper, no question about that. And the flavor, come on.
And it's alive, too.
Right.
It's strange when you do it yourself and you're involved in it. There's no comparison to the food. You know, I can go down to the end of my driveway and catch a trout and dig up a potato and grab a few veggies, you know.
Right.
And
you're going to be better. And nothing can be taken from you based on what you just said. You've got a lifestyle and a lifetime right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just have to push myself to get back into hunting again. I moved out of that a long, long time ago, but
yeah.
I think if I had to, I could.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I guess now that you're bringing that up, I would mention this. If you don't have a philosophical opposition to ownership of guns, that's a really smart idea right now.
Yeah, it would be wise.
You know, and if you do, if you've got a philosophical opposition to guns, then I recommend other forms of deterrence that are available, non-lethal forms of deterrence. For instance, you can use mace or stun guns. That's one. Get a dog. You know, those are the types of things that are I think, probably pretty prudent advice right now in today's world.
I think, you know, living in the forest up here, you know, we have cougars walking down here,
yeah.
bears, and they get hungry sometimes.
Sure, you bet.
And you have to deal with them accordingly.
You bet. And, you know, if nothing else, you've got the weaponry available to do that, or you've got the dog to warn you.
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
Hey, you've got something else going on here. I mean, things are not, you know, hunky-dory in this country or anywhere in the world right now. It's really, really bad. And I think pretty much, again, not to be a pessimist, I think things are really, really bad, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look around and see it.
Mm-hmm. So if you have one last message, we're running out of time here, so if you have one last message to give to the listeners, what would that be?
Well, my last message would be just this. Make sure you get prepared one way or the other. If I had a recommendation on metals for people, I'll tell you this. Look for smaller gold pieces or junk silver dollars because they'll be the easiest forms to barter with, most recognizable by anybody in the land. I mean, everybody's seen an old U.S. silver dollar at one point in their lifetimes,
mm-hmm.
so they'll certainly know what they're dealing with. And it's very inexpensive to do it when you're talking about getting in for protection.
Mm-hmm.
If people would like more information on that, or if they want any access to the articles, I've got a great article on the Federal Reserve fraud that talks about who owns these banks and why this is a fraud and how it's illegally operating. I'll pass out any of that knowledge free of charge to anybody that wants it. They can either visit the website, as you've posted, which is colonialresources.com, or they can call us toll-free at 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042 anytime, and we'll take care of it.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and all the work you're doing on behalf of humanity and waking people up to you know, what's happening around them.
Right back at you, James. I caught you on the History Channel the other night.
Oh, great.
And it was great fun, sure.
Yeah. You should come up and see what's going on here. It'll blow your mind.
I've got to tell you, I'm going to be in Alaska over the 4th of July, so I won't have that shot on the 5th, but I'd like to come for the conference.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, I've had multiple witnesses that have 2 or 3 PhDs, you know, top leaders in the field of almost every science you can imagine have been here, and they've just had their minds blown.
Well, I hope you keep up the good work, my friend.
All righty. Well, we've got to sign off. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Thank you as well,
James. And we'll have you on again real soon.
Anytime, let me know.
All right, thank you so much.
You bet. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.
Stream Guys. Stream Guys is a leading provider of quality streaming media services.